everyone, and welcome back to another episode of NYY Takes. As always, I have a question to ask Yankees fans at 61-66. Are we happy today?
Absolutely not.
You didn't cut him off, Matt, as you did last week.
Well, I don't think I had to, because I think everyone knows that I'm still thrilled, right? The season's in the tank. Everything's going as badly as it possibly can be going. Yankees just dropped a series at home to the Nationals after getting swept by the Red Sox. So what's not to love? Changes have to be made after a calamity of this proportion. Why are you not happy, Toe? I mean, just beyond the obvious that you never are.
There's no joy that comes out of this type of losing where it's still very... 500 is the definition of mediocrity. So if you're mediocre in American sports, that's literally the worst position you can be in, because there's no future and there's no present.
Happy? No, but optimistic. Looking up.
Les sounds a little different. Who was that?
Doesn't sound like a guy with five kids, huh?
No, it didn't sound like a guy with five kids that does CrossFit three times a week.
Does sound like a devoted podcast listener.
Yes, that's who it is. Our number one listener. Yes, the top listener on planet Earth of this podcast that we call NYY Takes. David, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, guys. Thank you. Glad to be here.
So why don't you tell us a little bit about where your Yankees fandom came from, how you became a Yankee fan, and kind of your thoughts on this disastrous season.
My name's David. I grew up in northern New Jersey. My dad was a Yankees fan, so I also grew up a Yankees fan, my brother and I. And I went to college in in D.C., and one of my this is how I'm connected to the show. One of my good friends from school is Matt's partner, and so she told me about a year ago that he does a podcast with a group of friends, and I thought, oh wow, that's interesting, because Matt's from Massachusetts, Boston area, Maine, New England. So I was surprised to see a Yankees fan outside of the tri-state area. But I guess that just passed my mind. I was never a podcast type of guy. So I was, I don't know what happened this spring. I was just thinking, I was like, oh yeah, Matthew's runs a podcast. So what was the name of that again? And so I looked it up and just started listening since probably about mid-May this year. Every week, you know, I on my way to work during the middle of the week, I get a notification or check it to see when the last show was run. So tune in, listen in, hear the commentary. It's a good time.
The notifications are key. I beg for those every episode.
This is such good marketing. Amazing marketing for us happening right now.
Amazing marketing. I mean, what better way to grow the base than to have your number one fan on the show? I guess, David, for my next question, you know, obviously you're a Yankee fan like the rest of us, but we've been on here all year kind of talking about the horrible nature of the 2023 season. A lot of different opinions on this podcast, but where do you stand?
Yeah. When I first started listening, the Yankees still had a winning record. We were probably at least 10 games over 500. It was early part of the season. I think the overall sentiment was a little bit negative, because at the beginning, when I was first listening, we had a winning record, but we were at the bottom of the AL East, which or progressed towards the bottom, which I think you have a balanced view, but in critical where it needs to be. But I think it's relatively spot on. Obviously, I'm disappointed in the season with high hopes. It's essentially renewing the cast from last year, plus Carlos Rodon, who was then injured. But the expectations were high, but definitely fell way short. And in the beginning, I said happy no, because I'm not happy with the overall outcome of the season, but optimistic, yes, because as you just mentioned, I want to see the new guys, the new baby bombers come up and see what they have.
Yeah, it's crazy to be at a point in this season. I mean, our first podcast of the year, we sat up here, gave our predictions for the season. And as we kind of love to rehash on, is we said this team's going to be bad, but they're going to win 93 games and make the playoffs again. That probably should have told us everything we needed to know about the state of the Yankees, was that there was this arrogance that even though they basically did nothing in the offseason, effectively, besides re-sign Judge and sign Carlos Rodon, there was this arrogance that, oh, they're the Yankees, they'll be fine. And it felt that way a little before last season to some degree. It was more toxic last year. I remember before last season, people were convinced the team was going to be terrible and then came out with that great start and kind of put things to bed. And then obviously second half of the season went the way it did. And then coming into this year, when you change nothing, but we're still in the ALCS the previous season, the expectation is, okay, this team might stink, but they're just good enough to be good in the regular season and have a chance in the playoffs. Obviously that doesn't happen this season. So I guess that takes us to what will be the you know, meat and potatoes of our conversation today, which is the future of Brian Cashman, Aaron Boone, you could even say people in the front office, generally speaking, coaching staff. What is the best path forward? And in classic Yankee fashion, Brian Cashman just like showed up on a press conference yesterday for 20 minutes. I liked it because what it did was, it was kind of finally someone in the organization saying the season has been a disaster and we stink and we're embarrassed and this is unacceptable. Did you guys have any other takeaways? Because I was, you know, listening to the Michael Kay show, you know, Peter Rosenberg was like, it was the same tone deaf, arrogant thing, which I didn't agree with.
What is Peter Rosenberg? Peter Rosenberg doesn't know anything.
So I'm just curious, you know, if you guys had watched the presser and then kind of be what your opinions were, because I didn't mind it. I thought it was completely fair game. But a lot of people seemed very upset with some of the things that were said.
I think people were going to be upset no matter what, simply because Brian Cashman spoke.
Right.
Sure. So right. He did say it's been a disaster this season. They're definitely shocked. I thought Cashman wearing glasses was interesting. That's the sign to me of someone that hasn't slept much, like not really utilizing the contact lenses.
Or maybe his shipment hasn't come in yet.
As someone that doesn't wear glasses, I am talking like an idiot. I think where people got upset was when people were kind of like questioning what his future would be. And this is maybe something that Rosenberg was talking about on the Michael Kay show. But he said Cashman was basically like, I have a pretty good track record. He said that when he was asked if he should be counted on to turn around a Yankee team that so badly underperformed this season and projects to have serious questions surrounding next year's roster. This is from Brennan Cuddy's article in The Athletic. So is there anything to make of this either way? And what were your takeaways from it?
He does have a good track record.
100%.
His track record is very good. I mean, the team has not been bad, actively bad, during his tenure. This is probably the worst team he's ever seen. And he's been the GM since 98. That's a good track record. I mean, I think, and I mentioned this last time a little bit, if there's an argument for getting rid of Cashman or transitioning Cashman's role to something different, it is simply the fact that baseball is an evolving science. And there's new knowledge being generated and produced every year. And things that we thought we knew 5 years ago are completely different now. And to have one regime that's headed by one guy in place for 25 years, things do get stale. Ways of thinking get stale. And Cashman has shown an ability to evolve with the times. But at a certain point, you just need new blood. And whether that means hiring him a deputy that can serve as GM while he moves into a higher role, whether that means replacing him altogether, I just think that a shakeup is needed. And that's where I don't have faith that ownership has the gumption to actually conduct that kind of a shakeup. And I think it's because they like Cashman a lot as a person. I think it's because they're pretty incompetent and don't know very much about baseball. There are a lot of different reasons. But I don't have a huge issue with what Cashman said, because you're right. He finally admitted what we've been waiting to hear someone say all along, which is that the season was a failure. And yeah, he said, you know, my track record's good, which is an objective fact.
Yeah, you made a good point about ownership not having the gumption to kind of shake things up. And that kind of builds off the conversation we were having last week a little bit, where it's we've gotten, and the Yankees organization has gotten so used to Brian Cashman, and Cashman has been there for so long that every single person in that front office is there to some degree because of Brian Cashman, because they are a Cashman confidant. Cashman wanted to work with them. It's hard to be in that front office without having Cashman tied to your name in some way. So yeah, one, I agree with you. I don't think ownership and the people that pull the strings at the top have what it takes to fire Cashman, because they're comfortable with what they have. At the end of the day, Cashman's been a very successful general manager. And if you went around to any other ownership group or any other GM and said, the Yankees want to fire Brian Cashman, they'd be like, that's insane. No GM is nearly has ever been as good as he has been for this long. It's not only the fact that ownership wouldn't have the gumption to fire him, but I also don't think ownership is capable of rebuilding a front office in any sort of way. Because the Steinbrenner family has gotten so comfortable with Cashman. Hal has clearly gotten so comfortable with Cashman. Cashman is great at taking Steinbrenner's punches for him. Boone is great at taking Cashman's punches for him. So I don't think ownership has any gumption nor any interest in firing Cashman, because he's their punching bag. And because I think they know deep down they don't really have what it takes to rebuild the front office. Because if you fire Cashman, you fire everyone else there that comes with him pretty much. And you're basically starting from scratch. And that would set the organization back much, much further than just, I think, letting him try to rebuild it in some way. Because in many ways, I do think this season's a huge outlier. This team is not a 61-66 team. They just aren't. If you were to redo the season over and over and over, this would be one of the lowest percentile outcomes you could have. So I'm okay with this stability idea that seems to be what's going to happen at the end of the year. It doesn't seem like there's going to be any harsh change. With the only potential harsh change being maybe getting rid of Boone, regardless of what that does. But I agree. I think ownership doesn't have the gumption, and I think they're not even capable of rebuilding a front office. So it's going to be more of the same until it gets figured out.
Brian Cashman in that press conference sounded a lot like Michael Kay for the last 6 weeks on his radio show. Like, the buzzwords are all there. Track record, injuries, lowest percentile outcome. Everyone else thought we were going to be great. All of those elements are there, which is why I think the fan base reacted as harshly as they did to Cashman's comments. But like everyone said just now, there's nothing literally or figuratively wrong with anything he said in that press conference. To sit here as a fan and think that we saw this team being terrible coming is incredibly disingenuous. And we've been saying that for the last how many weeks on this podcast as well. And I think Cashman is kind of pushing back against the fans in that sense of, hey, man, like, look, I know you don't want to hear it, but this is what happened. And at the end of the day, it was a pretty unlikely outcome. So in that sense, I think that Brian Cashman is talking like someone who knows that his job is safe, because he can go to ownership and say, here, look at the model. On one end, we have World Series winning team. On the other extreme, we have this. And it just so happened that this year, everything that could have gone wrong went wrong. And if everything that could have went wrong, naturally, the next season, there will be a regression to the mean. And let's say if we do have that regression to the mean season next year with Brian Cashman at the helm, will the fans still be complaining? I don't know.
Why? I will be. Because here's the thing. Everything you said is correct. And the fact of the matter is that they also didn't make the changes they needed to make after last year. And I feel like a broken record at this point, but I'll say it again. The Yankees had a below average offense last year. They had a well below average offense if you take Judge out of the equation. They needed to add bats, and they just didn't. They thought that just re-signing Rizzo was good enough to take an offense that was below average last year to being a championship contender. If you're going to be a championship contender in the American League, you need to have strengths in all facets of the game. It is not enough to have a really great bullpen and a starting rotation that's great as long as everyone stays healthy and you get some breaks and then have a crappy offense. It's not enough. Now, did I see them being a below 500 team this year? No way. I think I had them predicted somewhere in the low 90s for wins on our original season and intro podcast. But was there the potential for the team to flame out? Was there any real chance that they were going to get by the Houstons of the world? No, I don't think there was. And it's because they didn't do enough. So to sit there and say, you know, nobody saw this coming, blah, blah, blah. Correct. No one saw below 500 coming, but plenty of people saw the cracks in the armor. Plenty of people.
I think that's fair. I agree. It's easy to say nobody saw this coming because obviously no one saw a team five games under 500. But I think every Yankee fan on earth saw that the team didn't make any changes and thought they could just run it back with kind of the same thing, which in many ways might be why it's like better that this happened as opposed to them just making the playoffs and losing.
That was my next question. So let's say that. I think the front office went into the season thinking that more or less the outcome will be the same as 2022. You'll make the playoffs pretty comfortably. You'll probably beat the inferior team that comes from the Central, and you'll test your luck with Houston in the ALCS. Had that happened again, what is the conversation we're having?
The same one that we've had every season.
But no one would be calling for Cashman's head, I think.
That's an interesting, people are always calling for Cashman's head. I think they would. Just forcing it to happen earlier.
Okay, so remember that game four we went to in the bleachers where there was actually a pretty good vibe until everything went to shit in like the sixth inning?
Pena Homer is still kind of like burned.
What if in the 2023 ALCS, the Yankees were playing the Astros in down 3-0? Would fans be showing up with paper bags with the star logo on them saying fire Brian Cashman?
Yeah. Yeah, I think they would. Down 3-0 to the Astros again for the second straight season? Yeah.
I agree with Matt here with the ho-hum Yankees of... You take last year's formula and you count on either a slight improvement or a regression or one other player clicks at the right time and expect a better outcome. Well, the difference over time, if you keep saying that from one year to the next, we're also forgetting that the factor of time. Every single player gets a year older each year, and so they're more prone to injuries and can continue the decline as people age throughout their careers. Yeah, we have this year new young blood with Volpe, but some players are clearly past their prime, so they can only get on average would only get worse going forward. Like Stanton and Gleyber Torres having a breakout season like 5 years ago, you don't see as much improvement you don't see much more marginal improvement on the DJ LeMayus and the Stanton and Torres. And so, how much upside can you put towards just waiting out another year and getting to the same spot and hoping for a better break?
Right. And that's exactly it. It's the fact that you were banking on DJ LeMahieu returning to being 2019 DJ LeMahieu, which was something we talked about a lot at the beginning of the year, right? We needed to have that improvement from players that declined in 21 and 22. Mm-hmm. And LeMahieu, we kind of always knew that it was probably those were his best two seasons. And the Yankees paid to keep him around, understanding that they were paying for decline years.
Yeah, I think that was a Hal contract. I mean, the owner of the Yankees wasn't going to not re-sign the guy who just won the batting title. So, at the time, I think we all knew it was a pretty bad contract. I mean, 6 years, $90 million for someone that's going to be, what, 36 at the end of it? It's just not ever going to work out. But would you put DJ LeMahieu in what Cashman called today, by the way, or not today, but whatever, yesterday in his press conference, the unexpected poor performance bucket? Or would you call LeMahieu's decline predictable? Maybe not to this degree. Where do you put LeMahieu's poor performance?
Predictable. Definitely predictable. Not the most predictable. The most predictable one, I would say, would be Donaldson.
Yeah.
LeMahieu is also pretty predictable. Rizzo, you had the concussion in there, so we don't really know how much of that is decline-based, how much is injury-based, so that one's sort of iffy. But Stanton, he's a guy who we knew that the end, you know, the later years of the contract were going to be ugly. Everyone knew that they were going to be. They made that trade with the expectation of winning a World Series in 2018 or 2019. Which unfortunately didn't happen. So those you could all see coming, especially Donaldson.
Yeah.
I push back on the DJ thing a little bit because I think that the toe injury and the hernia injury really did exacerbate his decline. But that being said, yeah, I mean, the other guys, Stanton, I think everyone knew the back end of that contract would be bad. I don't think anyone would expect early. A 31, 32-year-old to literally not be able to run. But yeah, we could see that decline. Donaldson, we don't need to talk about that. Everyone could see that coming from both on the field and off the field. But that being said, I still don't think that. Yeah, you could predict the decline of aging players, but I don't think the decline could have been predicted this sharply.
And for what it's worth, I think this is probably wrong. So DJ LeMahieu has 0.5 F4 this season. Just take a guess. Zips does their three-year projections. Take a guess at what Zips projects his WAR for next season.
Two something?
1.3.
Yeah, I'd say like 1.5 to 1.7.
4.1.
What?
How?
Is this F4?
This is Zips 3 years projections, which, you know.
Are they overweighting the 2020, like, love. Near MVP season?
So they're projecting him to slash. They're projecting. No, it's not. They're projecting him to slash 273, 348, 391 with a 739 OPS. It's a pretty good season. I mean, and I guess the real question is DJ LeMahieu closer to a 90 WRC plus hitter? Or a 110 WRC plus hitter, a 115 WRC plus hitter, because he's been the 90 WRC plus hitter this year. But I do think that part is unexpected. I mean, that is so far below league average, especially compared to what he was last season when he wasn't incredible, but he was still at 116 WRC plus. 2021, he was 100 WRC plus. So is this a natural decline of DJ LeMahieu? Are these projections just way too optimistic? Because I think you can put DJ LeMahieu in the unexpected performance bucket this year, because he's not this bad of a hitter, I think. So that I'll give Cashman the kind of benefit of the doubt on. Donaldson, sure, obvious. Bader, don't think anyone thought he would be this bad, but he's been pretty awful this year. He's got like a 70 WRC plus or whatever it may be. Severino, terrible. Nobody saw him becoming one of the worst pitchers in baseball. Rizzo with the concussion issues, as you mentioned. Rodon being a huge signing and then seemingly becoming a terrible pitcher overnight. I mean, he's literally bad now. I mean, there's so many more here, right? I mean, Judge's injury, which I think we don't actually talk about enough as being horribly impactful to this team's chances. Because they were 11 games over when he got hurt. And it's not to sit here and say, oh, the Yankees, you know, with the current team would be in the playoffs if he were healthy. But I think they would be, because they would have remained a lot more competitive up until the trade deadline and probably would have added more pieces. So I think there's a lot more here. I don't think saying a team with 23 IL stints and like players in up to like almost the double digits underperforming beyond anyone's like reasonable prediction. I don't think it's insane to call this season a close to a fluke with how bad it's been. And I know it's, you know, hard to not cook Cashman on it. But I have to kind of agree with him. I mean, this season has been underperformance through and through on top of a bunch of injuries.
In the same way as the first half of last year was an abundance of overperformance by everyone.
Yeah, so I guess to tie a bow on the Cashman conversation, what do you want to happen? Like, what do you want to happen with Brian Cashman? I am fine with letting him fix this because I don't want anyone that Hal Steinbrenner puts in charge to be in charge of fixing this. I want it to be Cashman's job rather than anyone else's. But where do you stand?
It depends on what you – it depends on how, I guess, you want to rebuild this roster. Do you want to go through the player development route? Do you want to go by trades? Do you want to go by throwing a lot of money at the problem? Ha, 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 that last thing is never going to happen. So I guess what I'm saying is that I think that there should be a new general manager. It should be a guy who focuses on player development, get the lower levels going, revamp the system, teach the kids fundamental baseball again. That definitely needs to happen. And I still think that guy should report to Brian Cashman. Look, I mean, the only way you let Brian Cashman go is if he basically promises, hey, I'm going to retire to a nice villa in Portugal and never hear from anyone again. Because I don't think you can risk having Brian Cashman take decades of organizational secrets to another team in baseball. I just don't think that's good practices across the board at all. So I still think he needs to remain in the organization in some capacity. But yeah, depending on how you want to build the roster, I think you should hire a general manager who can specialize in that particular way of roster construction.
I would like to see at the very least a replacement of the on-field staff, pretty much top to bottom, because I think a huge aspect of all of this that we haven't really touched on yet is just the disappointing nature of the on-field product. Mm-hmm. The bad decision-making on the bases and on defense, the mistakes. So that, to me, it's not going to solve the whole problem, not by a long shot. But that would send a signal that the products that we put out of the field, that we put out on the field this year in front of our fans was not good enough from an aesthetic standpoint, if not a statistical one. So that's one thing I'd like to see. And then beyond that, I agree. I wouldn't turn the entire operation over to someone brand new, but I do think that there need to be some changes in operations as well as possibly player development because of the way that we've seen a lot of the Yankees' top prospects stall out when they reach the major leagues. Possibly some of that's just the on-field staff as well, but we did not see them get the most out of the core that emerged in 2017. And I think someone's got to pay for that. And they have to be thinking about how they can do better there.
Yeah, I would definitely like to see the Yankees actually play a clean brand of baseball, which is not exactly something they've done. They kind of play the closest. They play as close to football as you can get when it comes to playing baseball.
I mean, look at them.
A, they're huge. But B, it's like they're playing with power. And this is Dylan Lawson's hitting philosophy that they have implemented. I mean, this is what it is the whole hit strikes hard thing, which kind of seems to not be working the way they intended. And I think that kind of mindset sometimes can even spill into things like base running and fielding and just basic fundamentals when you're so hyper-focused on hitting a ball 100 miles an hour. And that's like kind of your whole offensive approach. It does turn you away from like what is baseball a little bit, and a criticism they've gotten is that they're trying to play a different game, and I would just kind of like to no longer see pitchers like dropping balls during PFP, or what should be easy plays in PFP on the field. I just even today there were a couple errors by Volpe, who's been great this season, but it's just. and then the base running error by Higgy going to third on the ground ball to short. It's like little things that just add up and make the team not fun to watch, and they don't look buttoned up or clean. And yeah, I agree. I think they have to go back to basics a little bit. The only thing I don't want is more like Brian Sabian, Omar Minaya hires. This team doesn't need any more advisors. They clearly are in need of like smart baseball people. And while all of those guys are baseball legends, I don't think they're the people that in today's day and age are going to be the ones to turn an organization around. Any last thoughts on Brian Cashman?
Well, James Click is available, right?
Is he? What's he up to right now? Is he like a professor somewhere or something?
Do you not think that James Click would love the opportunity just to stick it back to Jim Crane and the Astros?
Oh, sure. 100%.
Maybe Brian Cashman should give him that opportunity.
He's the VP of the Toronto Blue Jays.
All right. Well, you can make him a VP. Brian Cashman is an SVP, so maybe.
Click might go work for the White Sox.
I'm going to be a little critical. I'm going to be a little critical of the product itself. It's the actual players that play and post the wins and the losses. So if we're underperforming, it's the actual players that are underperforming. Like, we don't have a left fielder. Donaldson was the third baseman a few years ago and no longer there. We've had injuries at catcher. So whether it's promotions from within or grabbing someone that can post a 110 WRC plus, third base, left field, catcher, I think that's where some changes could be made, the roster itself.
I mean, my thing is the players stink. And they just need to play better. It's like there should be like more like fire Rizzo chants. I don't know. Okay. Nothing else on Cashman there. We'll see what happens. I mean, I still think it kind of depends how the season ends. Like, obviously the standings don't matter, but it's like it depends how deep the rabbit hole goes here, you know? Like, if they finish 10 games under 500, that is like epically embarrassing.
Yeah, but how much worse can it get, really? Like, you've called up the kids, you've essentially waved a white flag.
Called up the kids. You haven't gone full throttle on it.
No, I mean, what else do we have left besides watching Austin Wells turn into Gary Sanchez, but worse behind the plate?
Wow.
Yeah, no, watching him catch won't be that fun.
Dominguez.
Well, no, I want to see Beater, Will Warren. I want to see the pitchers come up. Like, I want a lot more, and I think we will once the.
We'll definitely get a Beater or a Warren once they realize that this King Brito tandem is pretty untenable.
Yeah, like we got to get over the Johnny Brito thing.
David just mentioned Dominguez, who had an amazing debut with Scranton. I mean, what was it? The Angels called up their top prospect after he had spent like 20. What
days?
Was it? Yeah, something days. Crazy, like a handful of games in the minors. So it can be done.
There's see how it goes. Like, maybe after Scranton's season is over, I think that would probably be the most realistic time to see him.
Well, that's basically, I mean, the AAA season doesn't even end until like September 24th, I think. So basically no time left if you wait that long.
Give him a week, cup of coffee.
Sure, maybe.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, it really depends how things kind of shape up here at the end of the season. I'm just hoping to see Dominguez play next season. Okay. Ups and downs. Haven't done it in a while because there's been a lot of other BS to talk about. But Matt, why don't you start us off with your up and down of the week?
I think that these may be the most predictable ups and downs that I've ever done. And
fair.
No further introduction needed. But my up of the week is my favorite player of the last 10 years, the first of the Baby Bombers, and that is Luis Severino. Ladies and gentlemen, he had a quality start. Let's hear it for Luis Severino. Round of applause. It is his first quality start since, doing a quick run of math here. July 17th. First quality start since July 17th. This was yesterday. He went 6 2/3, just a single hit, no runs, 2 walks and 2 strikeouts. Not a great start, but a quality start.
Yeah, now, I think he had like a 6x FIP or something.
Yep, that sounds about right. He posted his lowest average exit velocity in a start since July 1st, 88.3. And while we can pretty much most assuredly say that he's playing out the string here in his Yankees career and he probably won't be back, it's just nice to see him not get shelled. Yeah. I enjoyed it. So I'll give him props for that. Also, his start helped end the longest losing streak in a million gazillion years. So good job, Severino.
Good job.
My down is Harrison Bader. Now, Harrison Bader has actually received, I think, surprisingly little airtime this season for us, given that he was the subject of maybe our most heated episode ever at the trade deadline.
Our most popular episode ever.
And our most, that's right, and our most popular episode. And the weird thing about Bader is that, you know, we had a lot of opinions about that trade at the time. And his initial performance, especially in the playoffs, really justified the trade. You know, I was first in line to say, you know what, I was wrong. I made a mistake in my evaluation of that trade. And then this season happened, and for the first few months, he was, you know, the kind of a good version of the player that he is, which is a great defender, a good base runner, and a guy who hits lefties for some power. And, you know, he's on the light side of the platoon, and that's just kind of how it is. But over the last couple of months, he's really reverted to being the player that, you know, kind of the more 50th percentile outcome of the player that he is. He hasn't homered since July 3rd. And in that time, which encompasses 152 plate appearances, he has 7 doubles, 35 hits in total, and he's slashing 254, 305, 326, which is good for a 76 WRC plus. So,
hate to see it.
Yeah, he's been bad. But again, he's been a offensive liability. He's still a useful player, a valuable player with a lot of upside because of his defense and his base running. But this kind of goes back to the point I was making all of the second half of last year and all of this year, which is that if he's one of your 4 best hitters or 5 best hitters, you have a problem. That's a problem. Bader is a guy who you should be hitting 7th, 8th, or 9th, and he should be in there because he's a great defender, and he should have great hitters around him. If he's a guy you're relying on for consistent offense, it means your offense isn't good enough. So it's not a knock on Bader. Similarly to what we were saying, you know, last year and then this year also about IKF. IKF is a great utility player. If you're relying on him as your everyday starting shortstop, there's something wrong. Your offense isn't good enough. Same thing with Bader, I would say. So it's a down because he's been bad even by his standards lately, but it's indicative of a larger organizational shortcoming.
I think that's fair. I also think Bader will not be a Yankee after this season. I think some other team is probably going to pay him more money. He's going to want a Benintendi type contract, and I don't think the Yankees are going to be the team to give it to him. And you mentioned IKF, and I also think IKF is going to get a pretty good contract elsewhere and probably won't be Yankee next year either, which will be interesting to see how the Yankees deal with both of those situations. But yeah, Bader, someone who I defended that trade very staunchly and it ended up looking really good for whatever the 2 weeks in the postseason and even a little bit at the beginning of this year. But then, you know, it's been bad ever since. He's been on the IL a bunch with some soft tissue stuff. So, and Jordan Montgomery has, you know, a 3 ERA.
Yeah, I want to know something funny. My up of the week is Jordan Montgomery.
Well, that's a good kind of like yin-yang situation there.
All right, so Jordan Montgomery, since being traded to the Texas Rangers from the St. Louis Cardinals, has had 4 out of 4 quality starts. 2-1, 1.74 ERA. He is going to headline a postseason rotation in Texas. A year after Brian Cashman stated that he would not be making postseason starts for the Yankees. And again, once Montgomery got traded to St. Louis, he too had his whole, you know, kind of lashing out at the way the Yankees do things of, you know, don't throw your fastball, like do things our way. And then once he went to St. Louis, it kind of the change of scenery benefited him in the sense that they let him pitch the way that he wanted to. And then after being traded to Texas, he's had the chance to thrive and he's taken it. So, I mean, after going 8 innings 3 days ago, allowing 4 hits, no runs, 1 walk and 6 strikeouts, I kind of had to give that up to Jordan Montgomery because you could really use him right now.
In the 9th inning of that 8th inning no run outing, our good friend Aroldis Chapman came to the game and blew the save.
Classic. Some things never change. Yeah.
So that was a really fun blast from the past. Toe, who is your down of the week?
My down of the week is Tommy Kinley.
Hurts. Hurts bad. But
true. What is going on with Tommy Kinley? I genuinely just don't understand how the changeup has just not been working for the past couple of weeks or so. Is he just throwing it too much? And
I think hitters are just sitting on it? I think he might be throwing it too much.
Like, what's good with that? Like, he throws it too much, and then he kind of takes it out on some object in the dugout. That's, like, a very common occurrence now. Is someone going to tell him to, you know, like, throw his changeup less?
Well, it's a lot less effective of a pitch when his fastball is 94-95 instead of 97-98 like it was when he was at his best.
But he's still someone for some reason that I trust. I mean, I do think he throws his changeup 80%.
80%. Yeah, that's ridiculous.
And that's up from last season. That's up from 2020. Way up from 2019. Because, I mean, it's just 2019 he was throwing his changeup 50% of the time. And back in 2018, his fastball, he was throwing more than his changeup. So, yeah, when you throw your changeup 83% of the time, hitters are going to look for it.
Yeah, and then you're going to allow eight of your 9 inherited base runners to score.
Because all he's doing effectively is like kind of treating his changeup as a splitter. So it's like if you identify the changeup early and you just sit on it, hitters are going to be able to react because he's just trying to tunnel his changeup and fastball well enough to the point where he can fool hitters down in the zone. But if you're just throwing changeups every time, you're going to get rocked, especially when you hang them and you throw it so many times. So, yeah, Tommy's been really frustrating. Today was really frustrating, too. I mean, a game that you definitely should have won, a game you were winning 3-1, and then Tommy just comes in and gives up homers to what, Alex Call and C.J. Abrams, who has been very good of late. But it's like, and then he did it again on Tuesday, giving up that homer to Abrams. So, yeah, I don't know, maybe throw the fastball more. As we know, the Yankees are a team that like to have relievers throw their one best pitch almost 100% of the time. That is something that they've done with relievers. So I don't know. Maybe Tommy will change that a little bit. For my up of the week, I'm going with a reliever. I'm going with Keenan Middleton. If there's one good thing about this season or about the trade deadline that the Yankees did, it's acquiring Keenan Middleton. However, it might turn out to be the most meaningless acquisition in this team's history because he is a free agent after this season. So one can only hope that the Yankees are able to bring him back. But since joining the Yankees, he's only allowed 1 earned run and 11 innings pitched. That includes one of the 3rd innings today with 3 strikeouts. Speaking of changeups, he's got a disgusting changeup that he throws majority of the time. But he also works in his slider and fastball very well. And the Yankees kind of seem to have done it again with just identifying an undervalued reliever and adding them to the roster. That is kind of like the only thing they do exceptionally well as an organization.
If only anyone cared.
I would love to see him re-signed.
Yeah,
sure.
Keenan Middleton, like, this is, again, like, such beating a dead horse. It's so reflective of the state of the organization in a vacuum, on its own. Amazing trade. In the context of where their team is at, completely meaningless.
I mean, it was a hysterical trade. It was, like, 5 minutes before the trade deadline. And they're like, screw it, we're getting Keenan Middleton. It's like, what? Did you do this just because you can't do nothing? So you had to, like, just get, like, one of the reliever targets that you had?
It was a proof of life trade.
Guess, yeah.
Make a sure good one, not. Though, which is yeah, so hilarious. One.
Yeah, which is hilarious. But it might end up being for absolutely nothing because he could just go to a different team. And my down of the week is my down of the year, maybe, Carlos Rodon. I am incredibly, incredibly disappointed with his performance. And I think most of it comes from the fact that it was like predictable in the sense that, like, of course, for two straight years, everyone's been talking about how Rodon is kind of like a ticking time bomb medically. And remember, the White Sox didn't give him a qualifying offer because they were like, this guy's arm is about to fall off. And then he goes to the Giants, has an incredible season. And then, of course, the Yankees are like, oh, it must be fine. Doctors don't know anything. They sign him to a 6-year contract. He's getting paid $27 million a year, pretty much. And he's terrible now. He's a 6.27 ERA this year. Nothing good about his expected numbers. There is no silver lining with him at all in any shape, way, shape, or form. And I was at the game on Tuesday, and what annoyed me the most is that, you know, he was getting shelled on Tuesday, despite the fact that he went 6 innings and gave up 1 earned. He was getting rocked, and he got bailed out by some outfield assists. I think his xFIP that game was like in the 6s or 7s. But he's walking back to the dugout. It's like the second inning. And I see him say to Matt Blake, I don't fucking get it. Like, I don't get it. How do you not get why you've been terrible? He doesn't get swing and miss at all anymore. His K percentage was, which lives pretty much, like, in the high 30s. In the 30s is like 18% this year. His ex-WOBA difference between his WOBA is non-existent. I think ex-WOBA is like 360, WOBA allowed is 358. So he's just a bad pitcher now, and he's someone that's around for 5 years, 5 more years. So it's hard to know. Is there any optimism that we should have about Carlos Rodon's future, or should we just accept immediately that this is going to be another albatross of a contract? Should I go to the Zips projections again? See what they have for him? Because the Zips projections are making us think the Yankees are going to be great this year. Or next year, I should say. I'm curious to see what they say, because they said DJ LeMahieu was going to have 4 WAR. So, next season. Yep, they have Carlos Rodon at a 3.03 ERA next year. Which would be best, like the best earned run average in the American League this season. So maybe these Zips projections are just a pile of crap.
Probably.
But yeah. Carlos Rodon signing is kind of like a microcosm of everything wrong with the Yankees this year. It's like you have this idea of things going great, but in the back of your mind, you kind of know there's just something horribly wrong, and then it happens, and you're like, who could have seen this coming? And then the debate becomes, who could have seen, we all could have seen it coming, but no one could see it coming this badly. So I don't know. Not much more to say about this team. Anything to add that we haven't covered?
It's almost over.
I have one up.
Yes, one up. Please.
And it's a status quo, but it is an up, and it's Aaron Judge. Since returning from injury, his average has been a little bit stagnant, but just the last two games proves why he's still playing at an MVP caliber level of baseball. Now up to what, 28 home runs in 73 games, something like that. That's about the same pace as last year. And again, speaks to the offensive woes. Like, where would they be without that sort of production in when he was in the lineup in the early part of the year? But as of right now, for this week, he is still a bright spot.
Yeah, well, we kind of had an idea of how bad they are without him.
Yeah.
Because of how south it really went. But yeah, I mean, he's going to finish in the top 4 in homers in the American League and play like half the games of everyone else. I mean, the guy's unbelievable. You just have to wonder when the decline's going to come. Because what is he, 31, 32 right now?
I think this is his age 31 season, right?
He's 31, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's going to go to root of the Stanton, of the DJs, and whatever.
Like, what is the window for this team? Is the window shut? This is how we end. Is the window closed for this franchise? Is it, in reality, was the window 2017 to 2022? Or, fine, 2017 through this year, because I think this year they were contender at the beginning of the year. Is the window closed or about to close?
It's closing.
It's definitely not wide open.
Yeah.
Because look, they won 100 plus games in 2018, ran into the Red Sox, who won 100 billion games that year, ended up winning the World Series. 2019, they win 100 plus games. They lose to the Astros in the ALCS. 2022, they win 100 games, lose to the Astros in the ALCS. So it's like all of these are good seasons. And your hope is that you capitalize in the postseason in one of them, and they just didn't. So, and now you have Carlos Rodon under contract for all these seasons. You have no idea if he's ever going to really be able to get back to the pitcher that he was. You have Giancarlo Stanton under contract, DJ LeMahieu. You have Anthony Rizzo next year. We're getting to the point where it's like we actually are operating in a reality where we're paying up for all of these contracts we gave to aging players. And there's not really much you can do to make the team that much better. And that might just be the reality of the situation outside of just like cutting players or like phantom ILing them for the entire year.
And yet they didn't do anything to bolster the future by trading the rentals of the deadline. That's what made the deadline.
Yeah, exactly. So I mean, that was the biggest malpractice of this all is you didn't trade Wandy Peralta, who has been non-existent in the second half of the season, by the way. You didn't trade Tommy Canley, who you didn't need to keep. You didn't trade Clay Holmes. Like, you could have traded all these guys for actual assets. Instead, you kept them and then went on to lose nine straight, and now you're in a horrible, horrible situation as an organization. I think the window might just be shut, and unless they make significant changes this offseason, I don't see how this team can get that much better and push itself into contention. The only kind of saving grace is that the American League isn't that good. Is not the Astros are not the level that they're usually at. The Rangers are good, but they have a lot of flaws. The Rays, now with the Wander Franco situation and all, you know, Shane McClanahan, Tommy John, Drew Rasmussen, Tommy John. I mean, part of it is the American League this year was kind of wide open, and it's annoying that the Yankees aren't going to have a chance. And another part of it is that, like, you know, you can be fine and try to give yourself a chance. But I don't think this team has a lot of space to maneuver to make their roster that much better.
Well, they could if, you know, ownership was willing to spend money on it.
But they're not. Like, we know they're not.
That's what we're going back to, like, this for this entire conversation. Why are we so worried about the DJ contract is because we needed to amortize that salary value over 6 years in order to stay under the tax. That's the same thing for the Rodon contract. Judge contract, same thing. Although, like, the 9 years was competing with San Francisco and San Diego too. Like, you just have to look at all these contracts and the way they're structured, and it's all because Hal Steinbrenner doesn't want to pay the luxury tax. That's literally it.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think it's a place to leave off is, like, you know, what is the window for this team? Did we see it pass? Is it shutting? Is it shut? Is there a new window on the horizon with these young guys? We don't know. There's a lot of unknowns, a mix of optimism and pessimism from this fan base. And it kind of just depends on what side of the aisle you stand on. Thank you all for listening. Please subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss an episode. Be like David. Become a number one fan. And we'll have you on our podcast to discuss the Yankees as well. You can follow us on Twitter at PinstripePurse. You can follow Toe on Twitter at _Cito. You can follow Matt on Twitter at MCGerald14. David? Do you have a plug?
No, I'm a simple man with social media.
We're calling it Twitter, huh?
Oh, yeah, X, whatever it may be. Sad season. Without further ado, go Yanks.